elitist. Fuck you, Josh.
Geek Juice Radio.
No one to hear you, baby, just me.
He lives with his mom and his whale penis.
I'm the juggernaut, bitch.
What you would imagine you would hear if you got raped while playing Tetris.
Visit our website at www.geekjuicemedia.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Geek Juice Radio as we continue through our lists of movies that don't deserve their bad reputation. And speaking of bad reputation, well, that's a terrible segue. That was an awful segue. Just go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code JUICE, and you get 3 free DVDs, free shipping in the US, 50% off a single item, and a free mystery gift.
And all of those things will be smoother than that transition was.
Yes, way smoother than that transition. Charlie's not here, obviously, as you can tell from the opening. You've got me, though. I'm Alex Drowski. Whip, whoop, woot. Then we got Josh Hadley.
Woot? Are you, like, having a seizure right now? Are you hemorrhaging?
Woot.
I guess I'm checking today's deal.
We got, making his first appearance on Geek Juice Radio, Mike. Mr. X.
How you doing, everybody?
And coming back for the second week in a row, Cecil.
Howdy, everyone.
The list we got tonight is Mike's list of movies. So, you picked 4 movies that you feel don't deserve their bad reputation.
Predator 2.
All right, your thoughts on
that? Love this movie.
It is a good movie.
It's a really good movie, and it came out at just that time when the concept of a sequel not starring the iconic original was just unthinkable. And I guess wasn't repeated until Ice Cube's bravura performance in XXX State of the Union.
So, but then let me ask you, Mike, why do you think this movie has such a bad reputation? Because you're older than me, so you remember from when it came out, people just hated this thing straight from the beginning.
No,
my
Arnold,
question to you,
for starters.
Why? You,
no
you
Arnold,
really think
starters.
That was
I really
that was
think
it?
That at the time, that was a major, major problem for folks. It was like, how are you going to make a Predator movie without Arnold, despite the fact that people don't realize that the original movie was an ensemble piece until like the last 30 minutes?
Yeah, you had Apollo Creed being pretty awesome in the first Predator movie.
You got
Phil
the litany
Duke.
Of badasses in that movie. And
Phil
a screenwriter.
Duke was awesome. You had Billy from 48 Hours. You had
yeah,
Shane
stuff.
Black. Well, that wasn't his first, but yeah. I'll always remember him as Billy Bear from 48 Hours.
Oh, of course.
The one thing I don't like about Predator 2 is the fish out of water moments with the Predator, like in the city.
I can kind of see that where he's adapting to the environment, but let's admit he adapts kind of quick.
He does. There's that scene in that old lady's house and there's that bathroom. And
I really do like the fact that it really conveys like the sleaziness of the predicted future. Everything's kind of sweaty and shiny. They're almost like they were saying, global warming, ooh. The sky has this weird orangish tint to it. Violence is up and on the rise. If I recall, that movie came out like a year before the riots, didn't it?
Well, Mike, are you trying to imply that that's not what 1997 was like?
Actually, well, yeah. Yeah, I guess you got a point. I guess that was the seed that led to the hybrid cars and all this new stuff we're doing now.
It certainly captured our fear of Jamaican gangs because this was at the same time as Marked for Death.
They came out the same summer, yeah. I saw both of those in the theater.
But it also had the greatest, coolest Jamaican gang leader ever who had the wimpiest, most fucked up, most anticlimactic death ever. Oh, we're about to have a great big fight. Oh, he's decapitated.
And then they polished his skull. Add insult to injury.
And, of course, let's be honest, that was the movie that gave us the false hope that one day Alien vs. Predator would be dope.
Well, this was well before we even heard of Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yeah, about 3 or 4 years off.
But it planted the seed for the graphic novel, which if you haven't read the graphic novel, it is really, really good.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
You mean the comic book, Cecil?
Comic
very funny,
book.
Josh.
What a...
No, a graphic novel is a one-time story that is set outside of something that could not be done in the series. A comic series is something that is sequential issues released on a monthly basis that tell a continuing story.
All your shoes have to point 45 degrees to the left, or else, God damn it, it's just not right. It doesn't it, Josh?
Comic book, so graphic novel, whatever. It, you know.
Even though you don't have to defend it to us, defend Predator 2 a little bit more to people who don't like it.
Well, for a lot of people who don't like it, it's just, you got to give it another shot. It does have the advantage now of being a nostalgic piece. And it's always fun to look back at what we thought the future was going to look like when the future has actually gone by. Beyond that, I will admit, visually, it doesn't have quite the verve of McTiernan. But by the same token, I really do think the concept of the metaphor of the urban jungle versus the actual jungle is actually very well conveyed. And it has a very unique kind of visual style to it. And of course, it's got Bill Paxton at his frickin' Paxton-iest.
Even more Paxton-y than Aliens?
I would say so. It was like they turned that character up to 11.
Even more than Near Dark?
Well, a little. Well, that one has more badassery about his character, too, though. So let's be honest, this guy didn't really get a chance to be a badass till moments before. Spoiler! He dies.
Okay,
it's a Predator movie, guys. Everybody but the hero is going to die. You should know that.
Then let me ask you this about the movie. Do you think that part of its bad reputation is sort of almost meme-ish, that everyone remembered not liking this movie, so they don't like it, and people like Robert Rodriguez, a director I generally do like, just added to that when he said Predators is the proper way to do a Predator sequel, therefore implying Predator 2 was not?
It could be a factor in that. I do think it's another case of reputation versus actual viewing. I mean, we have a lot of films in the arsenal now from the past that people base solely on reputation. And if you ask them if they've ever actually seen it, they'll go no. Like, for instance, Hudson Hawk and other films from that time period where people go, oh, yeah, that movie sucks. And I'm like, well, when's the last time you see it? Oh, I never saw it. Watch it for 10 minutes and then decide if you really don't like it or not, especially compared to today's modern action movies, because you can actually kind of tell what the hell's going on in Predator 2.
Danny Glover was a complete badass in the movie.
Yes,
like, how could you not love him?
Oh, absolutely. Danny, the entire cast was great. I normally don't like Maria Conchita Alonso. She was pretty good in that, though.
Let me guess, you prefer her when she's being tormented by Nick Cage.
I actually prefer her when she's running around with a really bad accent in The Grid.
Wow.
Did you actually get the reference?
Wasn't that a TV show?
Running Man?
Running Man!
Oh, jeez, I should have known better. My bad.
Yeah, she was
only in a rerun.
She was so spooky hot in the Running Man. It was,
and apparently very light, since Arnold picked her and her exercise machine up with one hand. Out of the nailed wood.
Well, she did have those illegal cassette tapes.
That is true.
In the future!
But yeah, well, go watch Predator 2 if you have never actually seen it. It really deserves another shot.
It is a solid, solid movie. It's actually my favorite movie in the entire Predator franchise.
I think I concur.
Yeah, it's definitely on par with the original Predator. It's tough because they kind of teeter back and forth. But they're both fantastic. And I love the new Predators, too. But the first two are just magical.
See, to me, the thing with Predator 2 is, and when I say this, I am not shitting on the first film, okay? But the first film, let's face it, they were basically stock characters. They were caricatures more than they were characters. They're actual characters in Predator 2. And for a while, you've got this whole inner city drug gang war with the cops in this kind of almost dystopian RoboCop future. That's actually so interesting. The Predator kind of ruins the cop thriller movie that you're watching every now and then, doesn't it?
A little bit, I have to give you. It feels like it's almost in the RoboCop universe in that respect.
Definitely.
Damn, did anybody pick RoboCop 2 as one of their movies for this?
I didn't, but I don't think anybody did.
I didn't, but I do like RoboCop. Well, I like episodes of RoboCop 2.
Yeah, let's be honest. It's the sum of the parts, not the whole.
Yeah, RoboCop 2 is less of a movie and more of a collection of scenes from other movies.
And a great example of studio interference.
Yeah, but we're not here to talk about RoboCop 2.
Yeah, right.
What's the next movie on your list, Mike?
It would be Crime Wave, a.k.a. the XYZ Murders, by a young scrap from Michigan named Sam Raimi. I think that kid might go somewhere one day.
I first heard about it in Bruce Campbell's biography.
If chins could talk.
Kill.
Kill, talk, kill. I got the chin part right. As long as you hear chin, you know Bruce Campbell.
But I got to agree, I really like Crime Wave. Even if Bruce and Sam don't.
Yeah, they hate it.
They hate it. But
well, they have reason to hate it.
Right. I first caught it on HBO, probably 86. I enjoyed the living hell out of the movie. I thought it was funny where it was meant to be funny. I got the whole live action cartoon thing that they were going for. I really enjoyed the movie. And I watched it again recently on DVD. First time I've ever seen it widescreen. I still enjoy it.
Here's the wacky part about that. I caught it about the same time you did, but the reason it caught me, in addition to the cartoony aspect, was the fact that it was shot in Detroit. So I'm flipping through the channels, and suddenly I see Downtown Detroit on HBO, and I'm like, hey, what's this? And as I'm observing all the locations I recognize, I'm starting to realize, wait a minute, that's that guy from Evil Dead. Wait, holy shit, this is all the guys from Evil Dead. Wait, this is an Evil Dead movie from the guys that made Evil Dead. And they never called me back when I asked to work on Evil Dead 2, the bastards.
See, the thing that I remembered was Brian James. So I remember him from seeing him in Blade Runner.
And then seeing him with that really high voice and that's his weird voice.
He did it on purpose. They dubbed Paul Smith, but he created that voice for that character.
Yeah, the Beast Raban is really off in this movie. And when you listen to the commentary. When you listen to the commentary, you understand why. He got the part promising he'd do all his own stunts and everything. As soon as he gets to set, I'm not doing any of that. And then they had to rush to try and find a stuntman that would match him because he refused to do anything he said he would do before signing the contract. As Bruce Campbell put it, when Louise Lasser is the sanest cast member on your cast, you've got a problem.
Yeah, because if you know her backstory, let's just put it this way. She and Milton Berle are the only two who have episodes of Saturday Night Live that Lorne Michaels will not allow to be rebroadcast because of how difficult they were behind the scenes.
I've heard Seagal was pretty much a dick, too.
But it's so the backstory, as I got older and found out more about it, is just so fascinating about this movie. The case of, yeah, we're going to give you this little budget. Go ahead and make your wacky little movie. And then halfway through it, the production just basically goes, we're taking this away from you. We're going to re-edit this. We're going to change sound. We're going to change sound effects. We're going to change the music. But your name is still going to be on it as the guy who supposedly made all these decisions.
That typical Hollywood nonsense. It's a shame. I can't believe the whole thing with this is, this was back when Raimi was really creative. I mean, it just seemed like the bigger the budget he was given, the like worse his movies get. Spider-Man 3 being a prime example. Now, I realize that also suffered from a lot of studio nonsense.
Yes,
but,
and his hatred of Venom.
Yeah, which was clearly evident by the fact that he was almost a throwaway character. Actually, it wasn't almost. He was a throwaway character. But when you go back and you look at how much energy and how much creativity went into like the original Evil Dead and Army of Darkness and Dark Man. And then you look at his stuff now and it's, you know, Oz is terrible. And that was one of the most expensive movies ever made. And it was one of the just most generic, bland CGI filled messes I've ever seen. So I want him to go back to this kind of stuff. He's not going to.
Of course not.
I would really like it if he would.
It is a shame because And also, I think sometimes he likes to just only have certain things to focus on because I don't know if a lot of people know, but he, after this and Darkman didn't do too well, the Coens picked him up to do the second unit shooting for Hudsucker Proxy. So all those montages and stuff are actually little Sam Raimi movies.
He also shot various segments of Maniac Cop as well, and he also plays a reporter in that.
The cop that smiles, shoots somebody, and then gets killed in Miller's Crossing.
He is also an intergalactic 911 operator in Galaxus.
He is another extreme example of sometimes, yeah, I think Cecil kind of nailed it on the head. Some people need restrictions. I'm not going to go with the obvious example of somebody who revisited his legacy 20 years later and needed a Gary Kurtz to tell him, hey, man, chill out. But I will say that you know, I'm starting to get to the point where I think Tapert probably doesn't have the hold on Raimi he used to.
I'm not so sure Tapert always had it. You really get the impression from both Bruce Campbell's commentary on Crime Wave and his book that Raimi kind of, he kept getting more and more, like his ego grew as the budgets grew, and he just became harder to control in general.
Well, that's a sickness that can infect almost any director, truth be told. Even when you're working on like a really small movie, that sense of power of everybody doing what you tell them. If your brain isn't already well established, it can get to you. Old school Looney Tunes, it's got that kind of feel to it, but with humans, and it doesn't cross that line where you feel like it's reached the point where I can't relate to it because it's so cartoony. It's just, in my opinion, cartoony enough. And Bruce Campbell has one of the funniest exit scenes in the history of mankind in that movie.
And that only happened because the studio threatened to fire him if he appeared in one more scene. Because they didn't want... Because Bruce was
supposed to be the lead, right?
Right. And the studio didn't want him, so they got a lead, in quotes, who had only done soap operas up to that point, and you can kind of tell.
He's on the nose character-wise.
Raimi kept beefing up the Ronaldo the heel role, and the studio eventually kept, because remember, Bruce Campbell's also a producer on the movie,
right.
Kept going, why do we keep seeing Bruce in dailies? And they finally put their foot down. If we see Bruce one more time in a daily, he's fired as producer. Bruce does not star in this. So that's why his exit comes so abruptly. It was, Bruce, we just got to kill you because you're fired if you are in the movie anymore. He did sneak in one more time. He is the voice of the news announcer on TV. So they did sneak him in once more, but the studio didn't notice it.
So that was clearly them giving a fuck you to the production squad by finding a way to get him in there one more time, which amazing because if they didn't want their production to be so closely supervised, why did they cast the producer? Edward Pressman. He plays Louise Lasser's husband.
Yeah.
It's kind of like saying, I don't want my boss to book me on vacation, but I'm going to hire him to be my caterer.
Yeah, so that was studio interference, but look at it this way. If Bruce had starred in it, and it turned out to be the same movie, just Bruce was the main character, I'm still not so sure it would have done any better than it did.
I think it was just too weird an animal to survive in that time frame. It's so different than anything else.
Yeah, it's also built to be a cult hit.
Not to mention the fact that it's so different than Evil Dead, but not stylistically, just content-wise.
But then you've also got the fact that it's a weird science fiction piece, too. It takes place in the present of 1985 with security cameras and new phones and new cars, but everything is styled like it's the 1950s, including the dialogue. So it kind of takes place in an alternate world, too.
Kind of like Max Headroom or the Batman animated series, where you don't exactly know what time it's taking place. It's kind of a mishmash of periods.
Didn't the Coens write the movie?
I recall, it was them and Raimi, didn't they?
Yeah, the Coens co-wrote it, and originally the Coens were supposed to be the editors, but then after the studio took it away, they didn't. So they edited the first cut of the movie that none of us have ever seen.
Yeah, because it definitely needs a tighter edit. Kind of like some videos I saw today, but that's a conversation for another day. But
it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny you say that it needs a tighter edit when the movie's only like an hour 25 as it is.
Yeah, but pacing's so damn important in comedy. That's you really need someone who's got a feel for it. If you just get a I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this right, utilitarian editor who's just trying to make sure everything matches and cuts, it's not the same feel. Like, there are certain jokes that I think work by mistake in that movie because of the bad editing. And there are certain moments where they obviously should have cut away from where the effect starts to become visible that they should have, like the fake dummy on Belle Isle Bridge and the shot that I love almost more than anything else in that movie, Brian James's death. But obviously they should have cut it before you saw the little stick holding up the dummy.
But you've also got, and maybe this was intentional or maybe this was bad editing. I'm on record for a lot of different things saying humor, obviously being subjective, is something that needs to know when to stop. Like Family Guy does that. The longer a joke goes on, the funnier it gets. And no, that's not true. like the scene where Brian James is pretending to be the guy in the bathroom.
Right.
Or he's pretending to be her in the bathroom. It mm-hmm. just goes on and on and on. And it was like, okay, Raimi, we're at 4 minutes. It stopped being funny at one. Do you think it's going to get funny again at five?
That seemed to be something they were going through with a lot of the jokes, and some of them work and some of them don't. Like, there is one to me that works great where he's trying to get on the elevator and he keeps pushing the button, and that's all Brian James selling it because he's looking so panicky. And then you get a payoff when the door opens and the little kid hits him with the spitball and says, "I'm the captain of this elevator and we're stopping at every floor."
And he just whips him
into the hall. The very next shot is him throwing the kid across the hallway in slow motion. By the way, trivia note, it took me a while to figure it out. I lived in that building about 10 years ago. They completely redesigned it. It has the exact same frickin' elevators.
Same kid in them?
It freaked me out because I realized, holy shit, they did shoot this right in what's called Grand Circus Park in downtown Detroit, which has been totally renovated since then. But this building, because it's historic, they had to keep certain things and they kept the old school elevators. And I compared the shot by actually taking a picture of my lobby and then comparing it to Crime Wave. And I was like, holy shit, this is the building.
But back to what Cecil said about this being built as a cult film. If you look it up on IMDb, it says people who liked Crime Wave also liked Pink Flamingos, Female Trouble, Heathers, all cult films.
Yeah, those are all mainstream hits, I thought. Come on now. I mean, my mom loves that shit-eating scene in Pink Flamingos.
I just want to say before we move off the Crime Wave, I think one of the most original scenes and one of the most Raimi-esque scenes is where the Beast Raban is chasing Louise Lasser through all the doors, and then it's and it's that downward shot.
Yes.
That you tell me that's not straight out of a Looney Tunes episode.
That to me was pure Raimi. I was like, this guy, I get where this guy is coming from with camera angles like that.
Possibly even the scene with the rug. The rug is very Looney Tunes as well.
And of course the joke of the straight out of a Wile E. Coyote joke where the superintendent falls out the window, lands on the ground, survives, laughing his ass off, and then gets hit by the car driven by Brian James. And then he looks at us and says, "Well, this is so funny. Why don't you share it with the rest of us?"
Yeah. Which, according to Bruce Campbell, was an ad-libbed line, too.
It sounds like it. I actually read, there was an interview with Brian James and Fangoria after that movie came out, and they loved Crime Wave, so they just kept asking him questions. He said, "Yeah, I was ad-libbing, and yes, that's really my voice." And yeah, they had no money at all, and Paul Smith was a jerk, but I had a lot of fun making that movie.
So what's the next movie on your list there, Mike?
That would be the one that I'm wondering if anyone has seen but me. That would be Barry Levinson's Toys, and I gotta preface this one by saying, just because I think it's a misunderstood movie does not mean I think it is a successful movie or B, even a good movie. I do, however, think it's a fascinating movie to look at.
Is that the Robin Williams one?
Yeah, it's called Robin Williams.
Literally, okay, then I've seen the trailer and that's it.
Yeah, and see, the trailer fucked up everything for that movie. That's why that's the main reason people didn't go see that movie. The studio was so scared if they showed actual footage of the movie that people would freak out.
Yeah, the trailer.
So they just put Robin Williams in a field and had him ad-lib for 10 minutes and chopped together the best bits and made that the preview. And people were like, why would I want to go see that?
Yeah, the trailer was like him standing in a field talking about the soundstage where this field is and how they're making this great movie about toys.
Yeah, and it was basically a case of they were really hoping the names Barry Levinson and Robin Williams would be enough to sell the movie. And yeah, Rain Man was, you know, an Oscar winner and a hit and all that. And Robin Williams was coming off of, if I recall, that this was probably right after Aladdin, I think. But that alone was not enough because it's a pure vanity project. I mean, there's no way on earth a movie like this would get greenlit today. It's someone's personal fantasy put on film.
I watched it in theaters and I was 12 at the time. So it was like being dragged with, you're going to come with all the kids to watch the movie about the toys. And I did not like it in theaters, but I just thought, I'm like, this is weird and not fun. And I got what it was saying.
Right.
You know, with the militaristic toys versus the fantasy of these older toys. But I was 12 and didn't appreciate it then.
See, the actual story I got from it, and it's funny because it's a story, it's a lesson that Robin Williams kind of should have learned for himself, was when to grow up.
Yeah.
You can stay childish, but there are times when you need to grow up. And unfortunately, looking at Robin Williams' career, he didn't get that message.
Yeah, just a couple years later, he did Patch Adams.
I think I mentioned this to you guys before, but it bears repeating. To me, it's like a comedic version of what Coppola did with Dracula. It's literally a director saying, I'm really focusing on style over substance intentionally with this movie. It's a beautiful looking movie. It's confused as all hell, and you can tell that a lot of it just does not mesh well together. But for trying to create like almost a fever dream come to life, I think he pulled it off. But it's got some amazing imagery in it. Like that one where they're driving in the field and the house unfolds.
Yeah.
Like there's like amazing little moments in that, but then there's also incredibly silly moments. Like the whole
Shark pit.
How is LL Cool J Michael Gambon's son? I love how they don't acknowledge how, but by the same token, you don't buy it for a second in that movie.
The other thing with that movie, with the visuals, though, because even at 12, I'm like, yeah, there's no effing toy factory that looks like this.
Yeah, I think he was really in his head trying to come up with his version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for a different generation.
Yeah, it was way too...
It was whimsy overload.
Are you saying it wasn't like the beautiful Toy Factory in Christmas Evil?
The beautiful Toy Factory in Christmas Evil is perfectly realistic.
I'm sitting here with, I kid you not, a Christmas Evil coaster.
I just want to once again state, I'm not suggesting this as a good movie. This is definitely a movie that benefits from having a fast forward button. But by the same token, it's a skimmer. I'll say that it's a good skimming movie, because I'll be honest, talk about something that could use a judicious editor. Ooh, boy, that final battle.
Oh, yes.
Like forever.
The only thing that saves is the fact that they're playing a cool-ass remix of Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Welcome to the Pleasure Dome.
One thing,
and actually, trivia note, Trevor Horn was the executive producer of that soundtrack, so it's got an awesome soundtrack. Tori Amos, Seal, Wendy and Lisa.
One thing with this movie, though, it had the violent toys and violent video games at one point. It shows all these kids playing combat flight simulators so they could actually fly jets. And the debate about violent video games still carries, 20 years later.
Yeah, because foolishness in this country never really goes away. If I recall, my parents' generation grew up with people getting shot on the Lone Ranger, which was a kid's show. I grew up with Ultraman, which people getting shot on a daily basis. And my generation didn't grow up as violent as the generation after mine.
I grew up with the Adventures of the Galaxy Rangers, where they hit villains in the nuts, and there was a story about a serial killer going from planet to planet. That was a 1986 kids cartoon.
Yeah, I've never... I thought it was rather heavy-handed, but by the same token, it was the early 90s where everything was starting to become heavy-handed about messages. The next one I discovered on a Blockbuster shelf in 1988 under the title Street Fight. But eventually I discovered its real title is Ralph Bashke's Coonskin.
The movie that Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson protested against before they saw it and found that it's actually kind of a positive portrayal of black people, but okay.
Kind of reminds me of a certain rape revenge movie that a feminist hated till she saw and then she endorsed.
Mike, I just think it was so funny that they had black people outside theaters protesting this movie that they hadn't seen, and yet it's a movie that's about empowering them.
Yeah, and it's a good thing we learned that lesson, because we certainly don't do that now, do we?
Because, no, I mean, I first encountered Coonskin. I never saw the Street Fight version. I don't know if that's a different edit or just a retitle.
It's actually not a different cut. It just has a different title screen.
Okay. I always saw it as Coonskin. It wasn't a staple of HBO or Showtime. I had both, so I don't remember what channel I saw, if I saw it on HBO or Showtime. but I did see it late at night because I was kind of thrown off by the live action backgrounds with the animated foregrounds. And I was like, even as like a 10-year-old, this is weird. I'm going to check this thing out.
Yeah, this looks like a multicultural cast of Cool World.
Yeah.
Hey, Jowski?
And also Jowski? A Cool World. Of-
don't go there, Josh. Don't go there, Josh.
Holly would if Holly could.
Yeah, I know she would.
Yeah, you knew that was coming.
You know also, what? I wouldn't ask her to.
It had caught my attention, actually, because half... First of all, Bashki. But secondly, because he's fucking nuts. When I found that he was in the middle of production on The New Adventures of Mighty Mouse and was in all that trouble because of the snorting flower incident. But this was Bashki.
I love that series, too.
As I'm watching it, at first, me and my friends are going, are we about to get mad? But as it kept going, I was like, wait a minute, nah, there ain't no way Barry White going to be in a movie that he going to be mad about. And then, of course, we're going, oh, no, Philip Michael Thomas. I guess the acting will only be average.
Well, let me ask you this. Had you seen Fritz the Cat yet?
I had already seen Fritz the Cat, but I had also known that Robert Crumb hated Fritz the Cat. But before I knew what a fucking loon Robert Crumb was.
And you know what? Fuck Robert Crumb. I liked Fritz the Cat, the cartoon.
And quite frankly, Robert Crumb's got issues with my people, so screw him for that, too.
Well, I mean, okay, Fritz's sequel, not so much, but I liked the first Fritz a lot.
And you know he killed the character after he saw the movie because he was like, fuck y'all.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to go Bakshi, though, I got to go Wizards. That's my favorite.
Of course, of course.
You don't like Wizards?
Oh, no, I love Wizards, but that's every geek's go-to Bakshi movie. But wasn't Coonskin really the prototype? Because that's where he started his mixed media thing and all that. Because there's entire
was that before sequences. Heavy Traffic?
I thought Heavy Traffic was like it had some realistic backgrounds, but it didn't actually have the animated characters interacting with real people.
Yeah, it had a few. It had some of that, and it had live action bookends of the of the guy of the guy playing the pinball machines.
That was the one I kept asking them to get after we got Coonskin, but, you know, even though I ran that Blockbuster, they were like, hey, we don't work for you. So I never was able to copy.
I really do want to go watch Coonskin now, because this blonde girl with the boobs is... she's pretty sexy looking and naked.
Is he looking at Miss America by any chance?
Yeah, only without her flag in this shot.
Yeah, she has that. Her sequences with Scatman Crothers are the most biting social commentary parts.
I actually, unfortunately, had never even heard of Coonskin until it got mentioned. We're going to be talking about it. But I am familiar with Bakshi. I'm with you. I really like Fritz the Cat. I grew up watching Wizards and Fire and Ice. And his version of Lord of the Rings was kind of what introduced me to that whole thing. And
I'm sorry.
Well, even Bashki would apologize on that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was cool when I was like 5, you know, but.
Oh, yeah. It was ridiculously violent for a young kid cartoon. So.
Oh, absolutely. You know, yeah, it was just crazy. So I think that I like his style. I think it's unique. And it's one of those things where as soon as you see it, you immediately know that that's him, which is one of those things that I don't think that we really get anymore, because now with animated movies, it's such like a team effort where it's just like, all right, we're going to get 500 artists in a studio and they're all just going to make whatever we want them to make. And it's just interchangeable. There's no real distinction of like, oh, this really looks like a Bakshi. I was really bummed with Cool World because I thought that it was going to be a little bit more adult, like his older stuff.
And it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I think we all did, but that was another studio interference one, if I recall.
Oh, they trimmed it all the way down to PG-13 to try to appeal to people. And yeah, and it just totally did not work because you could see there were parts like when they fell off the roof and they came out of the one guy's butthole. And like there were moments like that where it was like, OK, this is like that kind of odd, off kilter, totally inappropriate for children Bakshi stuff. But then, yeah, it ended up just being lame. And I still like it. I like the style of it. But it I would love for one day to actually see the real version of that. But anyway, but yeah, I don't really know that much about Coonskin aside from, you know, what I read a little bit before we started here. And I do want to really check it out, though.
Do you remember Bakshi's HBO series, Spicy City?
No.
I do.
Think of the Harry Canyon sketch from Heavy Metal as if that were a 6-episode TV series.
Is it available?
No. Of course, I've got them on tape, but that shouldn't surprise you at all.
Of course.
But it's not commercially available.
Gotcha.
No. Yeah, and if I recall, that was another case of studio interference and budgeting problems as the series progressed. Because funny how studios never realize when they commission animation how much it's going to really end up costing and how long it takes.
Yeah, because Spicy City actually got picked up for a second season, but Bakshi said no, because they didn't like his... He used unconventional writers. He used people that had not written screenplays before. He specifically wanted, in his words, virgin words. He wanted people who had never had a screenplay produced before. The studio said, okay, this worked out really well. Here is the pool of HBO writers. They are going to write season 2 for you. And he's like, fuck you. No, then I'm just not doing season 2. And he walked away. He's like, I'm going to do it my way or I'm not doing it.
Gotta love somebody that stands up anymore. You know, we don't see that very much these days.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why, since HBO owns it, maybe that's why there is no DVD release. I mean, it's only 6 half-hour episodes. It could fit on one damn disc.
I could go into an Ayn Rand-esque rant about studio interference with artists.
You know what really disappointed me, though, about the Coonskin, all the DVD and Blu-ray releases? Mm. No extras. You would think with the colorful history, no pun intended, with the colorful history, I said it before I realized it was a pun, with the colorful history, with the protests, there's news footage of the protests on YouTube. You're telling me they can't include any of that on the DVD? I think a commentary by Bakshi would be amazing.
Oh,
nothing.
No doubt.
They just throw it out.
Libelous, but yeah, amazing.
But I mean, they just take these things and throw them out, Mike. You know, they're not even trying. They're just like, yeah, just put it out. Look, it's on Blu-ray now.
Yeah, that's the world we live in now. We should, in fact, they're basically saying you should be happy you have access to it. That's the way a lot of these releases are now. Think about how many movies that have such amazing backstories, and your only bonus feature is a trailer. Like, I think that's the issue with the They Live Blu-ray, isn't it?
It's like, no, I think that's... They Live is really loaded. They Live.
Oh, okay. Was it the DVD then? Because I know
it was the DVD. Well, the British one had a commentary track and a vintage EPK.
Well, you know those Limeys. They've always been more into film than we are as an art form.
And they call it cinema.
Yes, it's the cinema.
Well, I think a large part of what the problem is that the studios know that they were so troublesome that if they do allow them to do a behind the scenes or they let them do commentary or something, they're going to do nothing but badmouth them. So it's like, well, why should we pay to include this person badmouthing us?
But to be fair, did you ever watch the extras on the Highlander the Raven DVD set?
No, never did.
The documentary is called The Unraveling of a TV Series. The entire documentary is about how this show went wrong on every single level. And this was put out by the studio.
Okay,
so some of them do that.
Well, at least they admitted it, you know.
And sometimes they do. I heard they actually, didn't they attempt to get David Fincher involved in the quadrology? And he was just like, fuck you, Noah. I don't want to. The aliens. Yeah. To talk about Alien 3 and that interference, because, oh boy, you talk about studio interference. That's the mother load right there.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that clip that they cut out of the documentary. You can find it on YouTube, where David Fincher on set of Alien 3, wearing like an Alien 3 cap and a Weyland-Yutani t-shirt or something, he just looks like he's been beaten down. He's sitting in his chair. He slowly pulls the boom mic down to him. It's amazing that 20th Century Fox is the largest movie studio in the world when it's run by complete morons. Funny how they didn't want that in the documentary, huh?
I was just, there's a couple of movies that I can't fully recommend, but I do think that the reputation that they have is sometimes a bit undeserved. And some of them go way back. Like, it's considered a classic now, but I think a lot of people don't realize movies like It's a Mad, 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 Mad World were trashed when they came out. There was that one. A lot of people thought, believe it or not, when it first came out, if you can actually do the research, Maltese Falcon was a cheap throwaway gangster pick to a lot of critics back then. And, of course, the gold standard of misunderstood movies, Zardoz.
No, Zardoz sucks.
It sucks.
I like Zardoz.
Sucks, but it sucks gloriously.
He's ridiculous.
He's a director who has lost his mind and is high and is just being allowed to do whatever the hell he wants.
No, you know what makes a better movie? I want an entire movie, a 90-minute biopic of how they talked Sean Connery into Zardoz.
Think about it. This was from the director of Deliverance. He had just delivered Oscar-winning performances.
This is also from the director of Exorcist 2.
You got me there.
I mean, Exorcist 2 came out in a recent film threat. Exorcist 2 is the movie that demanded studio test screenings. Because not only did they not screen Exorcist 2, Warner Brothers had so much confidence in John Borman just based on his name. They didn't even watch the film before releasing it. The executives.
I have to say.
They outright said in an interview, after the movie tanked, this is the last time we'll ever release a movie without watching it or testing it first.
There is something to be said about checks and balances. I always like to say, you can be a creative genius, but it's really good to have like someone whose opinion you would trust to be around you sometimes to let you know when you might be fucking up.
So if you got the honorable mentions that you just did, what are some movies that you are sick of hearing other people defend to you that you just will not countenance?
Transformers.
People really defend that?
My roommate is one of the smartest guys I know. Very cultured. He knows his stuff. The minute he got his HDTV, the first movie he wanted to see on it was the remastered version of Casablanca. But he will tell you point blank, sometimes I just like shooting and killing. And he loves it. He dragged me to him and my sister tricked me. We said we were going out to PW3s for Buffalo Wings. And they went, you mind if we drive? And I went, okay. It didn't hit me that I was being trapped. And then they went, oh, we're going to the movies. And I went,
Mike, you do realize you're an adult, right? And you could get up and leave.
Yeah, but I wasn't catching a cab just to not watch this damn movie. I was like, oh, it's just 2 hours. What harm could it be? Cut to 2 hours later. I'm like in a shower going, unclean, unclean.
At least it wasn't the second one with the racist twins.
No, it was not. Thank goodness for that. But I will say, people seem to forget, the first one was pretty racist on its own and just in different ways.
To me, the first one is fetish porn if you really like hearing Shia LaBeouf go, no, 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 no.
But also, I come from it. You have to remember, and I hate to always have to preface it by saying my community, but there's no other way to really put it.
Mike is black.
Yeah, he's a black guy. That I'm constantly surrounded by people who say things like, oh, yeah, you got to see The Passion of the Christ. That's how it really happened. And I'm sitting here like, don't say it. Don't say it. Don't respond. Just walk away. Just
all right. Then let me ask you this, since we rarely can get a black person to talk film with us.
To you, geeky fucks.
I didn't mean that as an insult. I'm saying it's an opportunity I'm not going to waste.
That is true.
What films actually that do you think are offensive to the black community? I'm going to guess most of them made by white people, too.
Not always. I hate to say it, but next time you're in a Walmart or a Best Buy, notice how they have segregated the movie sections now. You'll stumble across a section that appears to be appealing to the black audience, and all you'll see is Tyler Perry movies and Tyler Perry movie ripoffs, and then all the other movies will be direct-to-DVD gangster flicks. And there's nothing in between.
Well, it's because there's 50 Tyler Perry movies that he put out last year. They had to, like, make their own section for his stuff.
And just like blaxploitation in the 70s, once people see it's going to make you money, every Tyler Perry wannabe was able to make a deal with every Lionsgate wannabe, and they're flooding the market.
Maybe this is just in my area. Keep in mind, I'm in around Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Packer!
The,
It's an MST3K joke. You got to get that sooner or later.
The black section, as you put it, also includes all the direct-to-video Seagal movies. I don't know if that's just something they do here or not.
No, that's legit. Back when I was a seller of less than legal videos, there was a little old secretary in my office who was like, oh, yeah, get me everything with Steven Seagal on it. I love him. And I went, you're serious? And she went, yeah, I love him. Black folks love Seagal. I have no idea why.
I guess somebody has to.
They love him. They love Van Damme. It's like, it's almost like, you know what I think it is? I consider it like McDonald's or White Castle. It's comfort food for their eyes and ears. They know exactly what they're going to get. No more, no less. It might be a little better if it's fresher, but even if it's crappy, it's still pretty much satisfying what they wanted.
Was your community offended by the racist twins in Transformers 2?
I thought they should have been. Most of my friends just said, ah, that's just movies. And I went, really, guys? You know, y'all did go to college and stuff, didn't we? We used to be in sit-ins and stuff. What happened? They just go, it's just a movie. It's just that shit the kids like. And I'm like, yeah, but I had these same problems when I was watching John Hughes movies back in the day when I noticed that every single ethnic character was always portrayed as the other. Because I didn't like drinking your juice in the hood. I didn't think that was a subject matter that needed to be made fun of just at that time, because at the time that subject matter was kind of serious and we were just finally being able to explore that on film, even though Boys in the Hood has not aged very well at all. It's kind of a Sunday afternoon special now, if you really look at it.
To me, and maybe this is coming from a white guy perspective, one of the hardest hitting ones for me was Rosewood.
Rosewood was good, except for the fact that history has proven to us that John Singleton wasn't as smart as we thought he was.
Still a really, really good movie.
Oh, yeah, really, good movie.
Beautiful cast, too.
You know, let's be honest, crappy directors can crap one out every now and then. I keep hearing Pain and Gain is surprising for
Pain and Gain is really good. Pain and Gain is really fun. And you won't believe with the cast that they got who gives the best performance. The Rock.
Actually, that would not surprise me because he was the only watchable thing in Be Cool.
Yes. Well, let's see. Be Cool. I wasn't a particularly huge fan of... Oh, God, now I'm blanking on the name of it. The Travolta Uma Thurman one before that. Get Shorty. Thank you. I kind of saw where they were going with Get Shorty, but I don't know. I just wasn't feeling it. I thought it was interesting. And then when Be Cool came out, I watched it and I was just like, no, this I like even less than that. It just wasn't my thing. So, yeah. And I'm with you on the whole. Look, I'm one of the few people who really trumpets M. Night. Like, I really like the guy. I think that he is completely underappreciated. But After Earth was a tough sell even for me. I'm like, that is the kind of movie that he should not be doing. I know why he did it. You know, when you have Will Smith coming and saying, hey, I want you to make this movie when you're currently getting a lot of crap from everybody. And then he makes it. It's like, ooh, you know, and it majorly underperforms. And it was a vehicle specifically built to try to push Jaden Smith in front of all of our faces again.
And I will say, Sixth Sense, and personally, I like Unbreakable better than Sixth.
I agree.
I hated Unbreakable. I loved Signs.
I'm sorry. I think Unbreakable was literally the first bridge to doing comic book movies in a more realistic light. I really think it kind of pulled that off. But we can agree to disagree on that.
What did you think of Signs?
I think Signs is terrific. I think Signs is another one that I don't know. What I don't understand, when I saw Signs opening weekend, when it ended, the audience uproarious applauding and cheering at how and then all of a sudden somehow the internet, when they turned on M. Night, it just all of a sudden his past movies that people previously enjoyed, all of a sudden they were bad mouthing. So there were people that a friend of mine who I was in the theater with to see Signs is like, oh, that sign sucked. I'm like, dude, I saw you clapping.
And see, I saw Signs hundreds of times in the theater. I worked at the theater at the time, so and you gotta remember, that movie was a hit, so that stayed at our theater for a good 6 months, three showings a night. I don't know what that would come to for math, working five nights a week. I saw that movie hundreds of times in the theater to the point where I knew where splices were. Even when I see it on TV, I remember where a splice I once had to make was.
He's looking, there's the cigarette burns.
Yeah, but that movie did something, and you know, I'm talking about the very first time I saw it when I just went with my wife. It made me jump on three separate occasions, and I'm a jaded horror fan. So for that movie to give me a legit jump scare with goosebumps, that was saying something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water? And that silhouette over the roof, the leg in the cornfield, even though it was in the trailer, it still freaked me out. And then finally the reflection in the TV at the end.
So really the Vominos one didn't get you?
The Vominos one creeped me out, but didn't make me jump. Same with the hand through the coal chute. Again, creepy, but didn't make me jump.
When they had the camera footage of when you first saw like the full side view of the alien walking by.
American footage?
Yeah, that creeped me out. Like just now thinking about it, I'm getting chicken skins. I'm just like, was so well done.
I dug it. But I will say it's one of the few movies that suffers incredibly bad from what they call fridge logic when you start thinking about it later.
But no, the one thing that I see all the critics missing, and I'll be talking about this more next week when I talk about Blair Witch 2, is they didn't get that a lot of the plot holes they're pointing out are part of the point. The point of Signs is there is no such thing as coincidence, that everything happens for a reason. That's the point of the movie. So when people review it, all this movie relies way too much on coincidence. You just go, did you fucking pay attention to the movie at all?
Maybe that's the reason I don't like it, because the Neo in me is saying, I don't like this concept of everything happens for a reason, because that means all the fucked up shit's happening to me for a reason. I don't appreciate that.
I'm an atheist, so I don't look at it on a spiritual level or a God level. I just look at it as, these things happen in this movie like this.
You seem so peaceful and calm.
Yeah. I'd be the kind of Buddhist that sets himself on fire, Tibetan monk shit.
You're a Buddhist because you actually attained enlightenment, because if I recall, the last tenet of Buddhism is if you see Buddha on the side of the road, kill him because you no longer need him.
All right, so we do need to wrap up.
I actually think...
We need to wrap up, Josh.
No,
you can carry it on after the show.
Mike, so
I do love when Jowski loses. Mike, it's still the funniest shit on earth to me.
Mike, I'm not a Buddhist. I'm a Buddhist.
Now you sound like Josh.
That was even funny enough to interrupt me. We got to stop the show now, Josh.
All right, go ahead and do your outro, Alex.
Buddhist. Fuck you, Josh. But yeah, that's it for this episode. Join us next week when we tackle Hadley's List, which probably nothing but booty movies. They're the fucking bootiest.
I seem to have struck a nerve there.
But make sure to check all of us out at geekjuicemedia.com, and have a good night.
Watch Wheel of Fortune or Meet the Press. I'm not the kind who gets depressed. Just give me action. Your love is the attraction. It's pure satisfaction. Some fun before I get old. I don't mind causing accidents. I'm on a roll. Who cares if I'm on parole? Just give me action. Your love keeps me in traction. It's pure satisfaction. It's is driving me insane. Let's storm a forward missile base, start World War III. Knock off the Ayatollah for me. Just give me action. Your love is the attraction. It's pure satisfaction. It's... Come on and give me a little action, will you, hon? Thank you.